means the topic itself, you can say, is about the leadership, right? Management, these aspects. But that is a detail of the higher principle of being able to understand what is actually the purpose of it. Right? Because we don't understand the purpose of what we're doing, then our success at applying the knowledge or technique will not be as good. Right? Because if you don't know where you're going, how do you know that your, you know, how you say, application of your knowledge and skills into an effort is actually going to give the proper results? Does that make sense? Like, let's say I know very nicely how to drive a car, right? I can turn left, I can turn right, I can go forward, I can stop, I can even go backwards, right? I can even park, you know? Now we're getting high tech, right? So, but if I don't know where I'm going with it, does that make sense? So all my technical applications, you don't know. You just go out driving and it looks like an interesting road, so you go up the road, you see some nice curves, and then you go out and then there's a big, long, flat stretch, you know, you can go very fast. And so much technique is being shown. And you could say, yes, this person really knows how to drive nicely. But if we ask the question, where are they going? They won't have an idea. Right? So that's what we're trying to deal with. This is what we're trying to address. Is we'll see techniques that are used. But more important than the technique is the qualities in which the technique is applied and actually the reason that the technique is being applied, which means to please Krishna. Right? It means, of course, be the mechanical, I'm driving to drive. You know, nice, okay, great. Sounds great, you know, could probably be good for, you know, a title of the book, but, you know, I think, what is it, Jack Kerouac already did that. So the whole point is that to actually get somewhere, you actually have to know where you're going, and that going, that means the ultimate, not the immediate. Oh, I'm managing because we were trying to get this accomplished, or get this done, get some money, get some men. No, it's that, why are you doing that in the first place? Why are you involved in that in the first place? Oh, it's my service, but what's your service for? You know, because we want to please Krishna. Exactly. So it has to be that whatever we're doing, we're seeing it in the context of how to please Krishna. So makes sense. So then we're going to be seeing that aspect. We're also going to be looking at the aspect of, okay, there is the technique itself. And you can apply that in so many different ways, so many different situations. But of that, what way or situation would be pleasing to Krishna as a person? Right? We as an individual, we can apply these things because we'll see what benefit we'll get from it. Either in the way of the actual result or just the benefit of being involved, and we like that involvement. You know, we appreciate the endeavor or the field that we're working in. Does that make sense? You know, we like being outdoors, so that's why. Why did you pick this job? Because you're always outdoors. Or, you know, why did you pick, I like driving, so that's why I, you know, deliver pizzas or something. You know, it's just, you know what I'm saying? There's something you're getting from it. You don't get a pizza, but you like driving. Does that make sense? Maybe a cold one that you didn't deliver on time, but then they'll also charge you for it. So not only did you get charged for it, you got it cold. So it's not really a profit, but does that make sense? So here then, we're trying to see that the skill itself being done well, that will be according to your nature and ability, and with time and practice. So if you have the nature and ability, the longer you do it, the better it will get. That's just the way anything works. At the same time, is what's the attitudes that we're using in this? Right? Is there pride? Is there that submission to Krishna? You know, are we being pleasant? Are we dealing properly? You know, so all these different things, how is that going on? Right? And then the third is that is it being done to please Krishna as a person? Because just serving the technicalness of it, that is service to Krishna. But the point is it's called bhakti when it's service to the person, Krishna, not Krishna as Brahman. Right? You don't hear of serving Krishna as Brahman. You understand? You take the elements of Brahman and use that in the service of Krishna. Or you take the aspects of Paramatma, use that in the service of Krishna. But it's not, jnanis and yogis aren't known as devotees. Right? A great distinction is made. There's karmis, you know, jnanis, yogis, and bhaktas. It's not that you can't use karma and jnana in Krishna's service, that's what you're using. But when it's used to please Krishna, it's not called karma and jnana, it's called bhakti. That has to be very clear. Just like if I'm cooking for myself, we'll call that sense gratification. If we cook for Krishna, we'll call that devotional service. Same cooking, same ingredients, same preparation, same methods. So we have to be very clear that bhakti means engaging the thing in Krishna's service. Right? Because otherwise it's saying, okay, there's devotional service and there's being practical. At the same time, is when we say in Krishna's service, we mean Krishna as a person. If you connect something to Krishna, meaning that I see the knowledge how it's coming from Krishna, Krishna's who makes it work, he's the Lord of the laws of nature, so therefore I see how he's involved, you'll get purified by that. That will bring you to the point of liberation. But it's only by doing it to please Krishna will you develop attraction for Krishna. And only from developing attraction then can we develop prema. Does that make sense? So sadhana bhakti means I'm doing it for Krishna. So if we want to expand the sadhana into our whole life, it must include doing this to please Krishna as a person. So, having the knowledge how Krishna is involved, like Krishna is the ocean, then bathing in the ocean, you'll get purified. In that purified state, in good association, then you'll be more inclined towards devotional service. But it's only when you see how Krishna is a person, how he's arranged all these nice situations and all that. And he is a person that cares about the living entities, therefore there's oceans and the oceans do what they do. Then that's when you start bringing in the devotional. You understand? So in other words, worshipping Krishna is a universal form, right? Either on the Brahman or Paramatma platform. Then that will purify. Right? Because the point is nothing works without its connection to Krishna. So even the karmis and jnanis, their success comes from doing something connected to Krishna. So it has that aspect of bhakti. Right? They may even have a temporary mood of trying to please Krishna. But only as long as that effort is being made. As soon as they get the result, then, you know, we're done. You know, it's just like you go to the government office, and you act very nice and very pleasant and trying to impress the, you know, secretary that's sitting behind the desk. And then if he's happy, he signs your paper. And then you walk out never to talk to him again. You don't care. So you express some, you know, nice interaction only to get your paper signed. So people may express this bhakti to get their karma again. Once they get it, then the bhakti disappears. Right? So in other words, bhakti is independent, so it can come and go. The other things, karma and jnana, can't function on their own. Right? Because they're principles of the material world. The material world can't function without Krishna's potency. Therefore, without bhakti, they don't work. Right? Does that make sense? Because we're used to it's just, okay, there's us devotees where everything's fabulous, and then there's the karmis where everything's absolutely and totally disgusting. Right? But the point is that if it's being done for Krishna, it's fabulous. If it's not being done for Krishna, it's not nice. That's where we're bringing up this finer point of Krishna as a person. That means that the person, you know, does expand as Paramatma, and his effulgence that pervades everything is connected to him. But they're both subservient to the feature of Bhagavan. Does this make sense? So this will come up. So because we tend to separate the philosophy as one thing and then being practical as another. But the point is that the philosophy is only explaining how the practical works. Does that make sense? Like you ask someone, oh, how do I do this on my phone? And they explain it to you. Okay, you go to this place and you do this and then you get do that and so many things, push this button, that button. And then you go, oh, okay, and then you do it, right? So now, technically we could say, oh, that's all theory. Right? Could you imagine the guy comes, how do you do this on your phone? And then he explains it to you. And then you go, oh, that's just theory. We don't need theory. I need something practical. Would you call that intelligence? No. So therefore, it's just like that. The philosophy is simply the description of the actual practice. Philosophy is just the philosophical part of bhakti. Right? And the service is the application of that philosophy. Does that make sense? We take it the skill is the practical. But it's the devotional theory is what makes it real. Because if you apply the skill without the devotion, then what's the difference between you and a brick wall? Brick wall's dead matter, you move around dead matter, and it's somehow or another better. You know, because we think it's very important. We take this body, dead matter, it interacts with other dead matter. We therefore produce more dead matter. You know, have a very nice situation for all this, a dead matter situation for all the dead matter. And the moment we stop using it, it gets dusty and the cobwebs and the spiders move in, and the tick-tickies, and then after a while, the rodents, and then, you know, everything else. Because it doesn't matter. As long as you're involved, it has a value. For the moment you stop, it has no real value. It's just more material energy. Right? Nobody cares. We care. Right? Because we're conscious, we're an individual. But the point is since its only value is that its connection, it means it only becomes useful because we're involved. But the point is why is it there and how can it be give effect unless it's connected to Krishna, because it's dead matter. So all these practical things that we're doing, that we're involved in, that's all coming because of Krishna. Right? He's pervading it. He's the laws behind it. We follow those, we get the effect. We don't follow those, there is no effect. You can say, no, but so many people nowadays are not following these Vedic laws and that, but who said that what they're doing now has anything to do with the results they're getting? Right? That what they're doing now is what they'll get next life. And what they're getting now is from last life. Right? You know, just like this is Monday, right? So, this whole week, everybody in Helsinki is going to be eating. Right? And they're going to work. Right? Now we could say is, yes, they work today, that's why they're eating today. Is that a fact? No. The money they're spending today is from last week's pay. They worked last week, they got their paycheck, that's why they're eating this week. What they do this week has nothing to do with what they're eating now. But it has to do with next week. So that means they could not work and they would still be able to eat for the week. Problem comes this next Monday. Understand? So that's why one sees, oh, but they're so successful. But are they? How long are they successful? Right? Every day you look at it, who's the richest person? And it changes. Every day. You know? They, you know, go to bed, they're worth, you know, 90 billion. They wake up in the morning, they're only worth 30 billion. You know? That's losing 60 billion. What would you think if you lost 60 billion? Right? Because they have 30 billion left and you think, oh, okay, no, it's all right. But they just lost 60 billion. Who loses 60 billion? You know, that was overnight when they slept. You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem. Is that it's just karma. Right? So now, then if it's just karma, why should we get involved? Because we're getting involved not because of our future life, this, that. We're getting involved just because he's Krishna, right? Because it's Krishna's system. So we just want to express our devotion to Krishna. Right? And you need a medium for that, so what medium are you going to use? You're going to use what facility you have now. You can't use something else. You can't say, well, I'm going to actually use my facility from two lifetimes ago. It was a lot better and all that. And so, you know, therefore I'm going to, you know, talk in some other accent or language and dress differently and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? No, you have what you have right now. Lord of goodness means using what you have in the present. Right now you have this body. We use this body in Krishna service. Using that, that's devotional service. Does that make sense? Yeah. Clear on this? Okay, so that's the whole thing, is that this aspect is the most important. That can't be not emphasized. The skill and all that is what you're going to use to express that devotion. So you can say, no, but we have to do the skill. Yes, but if in applying the skill you forget Krishna, then what's the point? So that means just like the skill itself takes constant involvement. Remembering Krishna and seeing connected to Krishna takes constant involvement. So that means the training and the skill in Krishna consciousness has to go along with the consciousness and the attitude that's required. Does this make sense? It can't be separated. Like now, devotees could have a management course for, let's say, a whole week, and really rarely ever bring up about the Krishna conscious aspect, because they're thinking we're devotees, automatically we're Krishna conscious. But the point is that it means you're Krishna conscious if you're Krishna conscious, right? I think that's, isn't that how the ad goes? If you're not Krishna conscious, you're not Krishna conscious, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the whole thing. Is that that's the element that you're trying to present. So, okay, so start with the first verse. So this is the last chapter of Prithu Maharaj. No, is it? No, then after it goes. Yeah, no, it's the last one where he's active as a king. And after that, he'll come into the forest. So the whole pastime of Prithu Maharaj is valuable in understanding the nature, you know, of administration. But we're just taking this part because, you know, time is limited. You know, if it's a 3-month course, then maybe we could go through the whole thing, but it's not, so. So we're starting, okay, this is Canto 4, chapter 22, text 44. The king continued, therefore, my dear Brahmanas, and these Brahmanas are the four Kumaras, my life, wife, children, home, furniture, and household paraphernalia, my kingdom, strength, land, and especially my treasure, are all offered unto you. Purport. In some readings, the word dara is not used, but the word used then is raya, which means wealth. In India, there are still wealthy persons who are recognized by the state as raya, like Ramananda Rai. You know, it means they're wealthy, they're influential. A great devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was called Ramananda Rai because he was governor of Madras and very rich. There are still many holders of the title Rai, the Rai Bahadur, Rai Chaudhry, and so on. The dhara, or wife, is not permitted to be offered to the Brahmanas. Everything is offered to worthy persons who are able to accept charity, but nowhere is it found that one offers his wife. Therefore, in this case, the reading Raya is more accurate than dhara. Also says Prithu Maharaj offered everything to the Kumaras. The word kosha, treasury, need not be separately mentioned. Kings and emperors used to keep a private treasury, which was known as the Ratna Bandha. The Ratna Bandha was a special treasury room which contained special jewelries, such as bangles, necklaces, and so on, which were presented to the king by the citizens. This jewelry was kept separate from the regular treasury house, where all the collected revenues were kept. Right? In other words, what was given directly to him was kept in one place, and what was gained from the state, from taxes and revenues and fees penalties, all these different kinds of things. The governmental, that was in the main treasury. So that's what ran the government, ran the country. right? But the other one, that's considered his private fortune. Right? He's in control of the whole treasury because he's managing one, and then the other is his personal, which then he is then seeing that it's engaged in Krishna's service. Thus, Prithvimarsh offered his stock of private jewelry to the lotus feet of Kumaras, right? So he's saying, why is that separately given? Because if he offers the kingdom, then naturally, then the treasury would be involved, but he's meaning his own treasury. Because we're trying to bring down the aspect of one's commitment to Krishna. It has already been admitted that all the king's property belonged to the Brahmanas, and that Prithu Maharaj was simply using it for the welfare of the state. If they were actually the property of the Brahmanas, how could it be offered again to them? In this regard, Sripad Sridhar Swami has explained that this offering is just like the servant's offering of food to his master. The food already belongs to the master, for the master has purchased it, but the servant, by preparing food, makes it acceptable to the master, and thus offers it to him. In this way, everything belonging to Prithu Maharaj was offered to the Kumaras. So, this principle of how it belongs, everything belongs to the Brahmins, everything belongs to Krishna is already there, and then we, by our service, we try to make it more acceptable to Krishna. That's why it has to be in line with what will be pleasing to Krishna. Because if it's not in line with what's pleasing to Krishna, then how can we say that the service is there? What is the point of the management? Then we're just met, like we talked before, the man just driving down the road, showing off his skills, great. You know, you could say, wow, check how he did that corner, or how he, you know, dealt in the straight, or, you know, how he passed that other car. So he could say all those things. But the point is he's going nowhere. So then, what's the point? So you can learn tactically some of these things from the person. But in principle, then what's the point in Krishna consciousness? So that's why just knowing what's the tactical mechanical isn't actually enough unless you know how to connect it to Krishna. Right? So that's the whole point, is we want to please Krishna. That's the strategy. How do we do that? Then we engage our nature. What is our nature? Then we see, okay, so we can do this or that. So in this case, we can do some organization for Krishna. Right? Then there's going to be, okay, then what organization you're going to do? Then you have your practical managing this or that, and then within that there'll be the finer techniques of how that's being done. Does it make sense? But that overall has to be pleasing Krishna, right? So strategy has, you can mean the overall total process that you're going through here, but if you're breaking it down, strategy means that mentality. What is the actual goal? It's not, oh, to get this done, or to manage the temple well, or to preach, and okay, but why do all those things? It's to please Krishna. Right? Then to please Krishna, then he has things that he likes. You know, the association of devotees, preaching, so, you know, giving that association so that others can take up that association, we call that preaching. Then how that'll be preaching done, you have the book distribution, you have, you know, different programs, you have the programs of the temple. Does that make sense? So all these things, then how you're going to do the distribution, then you have things, okay, we have to get books, we have to this and that, then where are they going to go? So this one goes here, that one goes there, then you have then how does the book done? Okay, you hold it like this, and you stop the person and say this or that. You understand? So all these things are there, but if all that doesn't connect back to pleasing Krishna, then it's a problem. Yes.
Maharaj, mentality and goal. You mentioned that pleasing Krishna at the same time, goal and mentality.
It means the mentality is what you're going to use in applying the knowledge and skills. In other words, you're going to have the knowledge and skills, then you're going to have the mentality in which you apply it, the attitude. Yeah. Then you're going to have that devotion to Krishna, just like serving Krishna in a submissive mood, that's better than, you know, being angry or something. Right? So that's why then it's part of the process, because we'll think, no, I did everything technically correct. But if the attitude's not right, it also doesn't carry the same flavor.
But if that attitude is to please Krishna, then
yes,
that means at the same time it's a goal to please Krishna, and that attitude, yes, is to please Krishna.
Yes. Yes. No, it means in other words, what we're saying is the knowledge and attitude are being engaged in the process to please Krishna. But what we're bringing out is because sometimes only one is seen and not the other. You know, just like you get on the one side is that, you know, it got done, it was efficiently done. What's the problem? Every sense saying, no, we don't like it. What's not to like? It was fabulous. But the point is what's wrong, the attitude. Or you have the other thing, is no, but they're trying, this is severe, they want to do. Why don't you give them the chance? Because they don't know the skill. No, but it's they feel like it, but they don't know the skill. You know what I'm saying? So you have to have both. Does that make sense? So you'll get both of them. Those who are more practical, they'll go on this. The skill is everything, and those who are less practical, they'll go on, it's the mood, it's everything. Like that. But the point is, it's the combination. But even you have that nice combination, unless you have Krishna consciousness, then it's still a waste of time. So here in this canto, we'll see more how to nicely engage them and everything. But as we get up, all these things, because all that detail will be expressed. But then once it gets, that's understood, how to connect these to Krishna, see from the seventh canto, that then they won't talk so much about the detail anymore. They'll talk more about seeing that the mentality and that mood of Krishna consciousness is there. They'll talk more on that side, less on the skill, because it's already, the skill's been discussed. So, yes?
I mean, there was one incident, probably in a graphical way, in the beginning in Boston, so Prabhupada talked about preaching a message to the Bhagavatam. One disciple asked, what if they will not be receptive to the message? And then Prabhupada said, then we will preach to the walls, and Krishna will be pleased.
Mm.
So he...
Yeah, that attitude that we'll try.
Yeah, he took out that minor point.
Yeah. Means we're committed to it. I think it was the Shatadanya. He came into the room because he was one of the... He was who would do service for Prabhupada when he's in Mayapur, Vrindavan. So then he came into the room. Maybe he was even in Calcutta. But when he came in the room, Prabhupada just looked at him and said, are you convinced? He was kind of like convinced of what happened, you know, he didn't, what he meant is, are you convinced of Krishna consciousness? Are you convinced that, you know, this is the thing to do, to commit yourself to? You know, that's the problem, you know, because if you're convinced, then everything will work. That faith is there. You know, so you know, as you apply in devotional service, they become a lot different. Just like in the spiritual world, you don't have to make these distinctions. We make the distinctions here because of the tendency to mix things. It's not pure devotional service. We'll mix them. So that's why that distinction is made. Does that make sense? Yeah. Well, then in the spiritual world, because the forms and actions are all done to please Krishna, it's just all called devotional service. So you don't make a distinction, but here we make the distinction so we understand. Because we'll think, oh, okay, Mother Jashoda, she cooks for Krishna, she takes care of the house, she arranges his bath and ornaments, and, you know, that he's safe and healthy and like this. So if I do all those, then, you know, that would be good. But it's pointed out by the Acharyas that, no, her love for Krishna is the primary aspect. The secondary is that she's expressing it through parental rasa, right? And then that parental rasa, you know, that's the primary, if you take that as the primary, then her cooking for Krishna and all that, and that's, in other words, she has that love for Krishna, and the form it takes to express it is cooking for it. Does that make sense? But there, because it's non-different, in other words, they have that attitude, because of that, to express it, they cook. They're already perfect. Right? But here, then we could cook for ourselves quite easily and have to be kind of reminded that it's for Krishna. Right? So that's the whole thing, is secondary we catch, primary we tend to not. That's how we got ourselves here. We're here because when Mother just showed us these opportunities to cook for Krishna, we just see the opportunities. So that's the, Ashray Vishay. I think that's called Alambana. Then you have the Udipan, which is therefore which things in the field then inspire parental rasa. So seeing things, in the house connected to Krishna, like that, then that reminds her of Krishna and that inspires her in that service to Krishna. So that's the difference. It's when they see things, it reminds them of Krishna. Right? And it'll be in the area of their values. Right? Like Mother Jashoda sees some bale fruit, what is she going to think? We could make some nice bale juice for Krishna. What happens if the cow, so that's the Udipan for her. But what if a cowherd boy sees a bale fruit? And they think, oh, we could play games with this. Roll it around, play catch, do all kinds of things with it. Does that make sense? And then after playing, then of course we can eat it, but first we're gonna play. So if you wonder where children, about mothers always tell them, don't play with your food, and that's where it comes from. Because they're playing for Krishna. So that's the whole point, is we're taking part, it's all Krishna's, but what parts we see that are value when we see those connected to Krishna and for Krishna's pleasure as a person, that's when then we call this bhakti. Right? So it's not that it's not already Krishna. So we have to be very careful not to get into getting too mental. Nowadays, you see, sometimes it's popular, you take things too far, like here. Oh, but it says here, Goswami's treasury, and he already offered his kingdom. His treasury is part of the kingdom. Why is he offering this? You understand? Because they don't know enough, right? So, how you say, my mother would say, you know enough to be dangerous. not enough to actually be helpful, just enough to be dangerous. Yeah. So that we have to avoid that. Right? You have a saying like that here? Yeah, similar, yeah. So that's what Sridhar Swami is pointing out, is that no, it's all connected to him. So then in that way then, here, Dara is wife, but the point is it's not wife meaning that his wife is given to the Kumaras, but his principle of how he sees his wife and engaging them in service to Krishna based on the instructions of the Kumaras, how to engage in the service, then that's being done. So in this way, everything he has is being engaged in the service of the Lord through the instructions of the Kumaras. That makes sense? So it's not the principle as he's handing over his wife and handing over everything. Because what are they going to do? Right? But it's being, in other words, what's the important thing with Brahman? The instructions. Therefore, giving everything to the Brahmins means everything you have is used for following the direction of the Brahmins. So in this case, it means the Kumaras. Right? Other times you see kings, Narad Muni's giving instructions, or different sages, I think 11th canto, then the Nava Yogendras are speaking, I think the king Navi, like this. So you get all these different aspects that's how things work. Does that make sense? So we have to be careful to not get distracted by our own logic. But we have to also know the culture and philosophy, then it all makes sense. Because if we just take it sometimes at face value, it doesn't work. So what Prabhupada is saying here is that your wealth. So then in that case, why does he have wealth? Right? Why is the king a king? Right? Because there's a queen. Right? Without the queen, he's not going to have that, get out there and do things like that. Just like you see Priyavrata. No queen. He sits out in the forest and just meditates on Krishna, right? They bring him into the, into the city, and he gets married, and he's the king, right? Now he manages the whole thing. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. You don't see that there's kings without queens. Does that make sense? So in this way, then, you know, in he's saying that it's more important to understand that it's wealth, because the feminine nature represents the opulence. So all this opulence is there because it's the queen. Yes? Well, so then in this way, then everything's being offered. Yes? Well. Okay, verse 45. Since only a person who is completely educated according to the principles of Vedic knowledge deserves to be commander in chief, ruler of the state, the first to chastise, and the proprietor of the whole planet, Prithu Maharaj offered everything to the Kumaras. Right, so it's only when one's properly educated according to the Vedic principles, then they can do all these things, be commander in chief, you know, who's the head person in the whole hierarchy. He's the ruler of the state. He actually manages the whole thing. The first to chastise, right? Because then he knows what's the standards. So he knows when standards aren't being followed. It's not just feeling. It's not what the internet says is standards. And the proprietor of the whole planet, you know, and then it belongs to them. And it belongs to them, meaning on behalf of Krishna. It's not that it's theirs, meaning now they can do whatever they like. No, it's their service to take care of. So this is their quota. The whole planet's their quota. And then what's their quota? To see that everybody else who has their quotas on the planet then are taken care of so that they can nicely serve Krishna. Right? So it makes sense. So you have all these overlapping. Oh, if it's his, he can do it. No. You have to look at the Vedic from all these levels at once. You have to see the spiritual, the metaphysical, and the physical. If you just take the physical and try to argue everything, then it'll always have a weakness. You know, even the metaphysical, though, most of the time, it will be applying as far as the workings of things, but the point of things working is only if there's Krishna consciousness. Okay, purport. In this verse, it is very clearly stated that a kingdom, state, or empire must be governed under the instructions of saintly persons and Brahmins like the Kumaras. When monarchy ruled throughout the world, the monarch was actually directed by a board of Brahmanas and saintly persons. If the king, as the administrator of the state, executed his duties as a servant of the Brahmanas, it is not that the kings or Brahmanas were dictators, nor did they consider themselves proprietors of the state. Yeah. Right, but he had control of the whole state. Right, so then what would be done with the facilities of the state, that was what the king would make the decision on. But how is he doing that? Based on the Vedas, and how does he understand that? What he's learned from the Brahmins. So according to how they say one should be Krishna conscious, the attitude and the technique, that's what's being applied. That makes sense. So everybody simultaneously is the proprietor and not. Just like someone, you have what you call your possessions, but do you actually possess them? You understand? It's called our possessions, that's how it's used. But technically, then, at any point, they can disappear. Right? Or, they'll remain, we'll disappear. Like say, my house, you know, come back after 100 years, your house is still there, but where's the proprietor? No, there's somebody else saying, no, this is my house. Right? So that's the difficulty. The kings were also well versed in Vedic literatures and thus were familiar with the injunction of Sri Upanishad, Ishvashtamidam Sarvam. Everything that exists belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna also claims that he is the proprietor of all planetary systems, Sarva Loka Maheshwara. Since this is the case, no one can claim to be proprietor of the state. So he's the controller of everything, everything's there that's his, right? It belongs to the Lord, he controls it, it's the Lord's and he controls it. We may be involved in it and say it's ours, but ultimately we don't actually control and we don't actually own. Since this is the case, no one can claim to be the proprietor of the state. The king, president, or head of state should always remember that he is not the proprietor, but the servant. So if as administrators, then we see that that is our service. Right? It may mean that we have authority over so many others and so much facility. But in reality, what's that coming from? That comes from, that's our service. Right? That's what we can do for Krishna. Does this make sense? Like that. Others can do other aspects, but because you want to do something on a great scale, therefore, that's why you need administration. Right? Getting little things done, that's why you need managers. The overall, that's why you need administration. And how that overall and those details connect to Krishna, that's then where you have your advisors. Does that make sense? That's how the whole thing works. That's why then we based on Shastra, and then we're not having just Bhagavatam, we're having Bhagavatam with Prabhupada's purports. That's how we know how to connect things. At the present age, the king or president forgets that he is the servant of God and thinks of himself as servant of the people. The present democratic government is proclaimed to be a people's government, a government by the people and for the people, but this type of government is not sanctioned by the Vedas. The Vedas maintain that the kingdom should be governed for the purpose of satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore should be ruled by a representative of the Lord. Right? So in other words, the head of state is not representing the people, he's representing the Lord. But because all the people belong to the Lord, therefore then one is the servant of the Lord to see that all those people are taken care of. And that's the whole point of the people being represented, is so that they're taken care of, right? In other words, before you didn't have so much democracy as a general administrative method. Right? Generally, you had monarchies and things like that. A few little here and there, some pockets of people, they may have used them. You know, maybe the Essenes or, you know, some group in Brazil or, you know, different places of the world, they might have a government like that. But in general, then it's not. And it's going, you know, in some places, like you see in India, it's going nice, but in the other places, you see that not necessarily is going nice. So therefore, then the democratic idea comes up because the people weren't being taken care of, so you want them represented, so therefore then that's done. But in the Vedic system, the people are already represented in the government. Right? Nowadays you have what is a constitutional monarchy where the people are represented, but the king's not actually in charge. But the Vedic is the people were represented and you had the king. So what we call the parliament would be the lower house. And then the king and the ministers, that would be the higher house. That makes sense? And in this way, then they would make decisions. So one has to see how everything's going on, how people are being taken care of, and that those needs are being fulfilled according to how the scriptures recommend. So one can't lose sight of that. But if it's just for the people, then what's the point? We have a temple and all we do is it's for taking care of the devotees, you know, it's not about Krishna and worshipping Krishna, then we'd say, what kind of temple is that? Say, maybe it's a hostel, you know, or you know, some kind of thing where people can stay and be taken care of, but we wouldn't call it a temple. So the Vedic concept is that it has to be seen that it's owned by Krishna, its endeavor is for Krishna. That way then everybody's needs get taken care of, since he is the proprietor. Just like the previous example, the servants in the house get taken care of because they're serving. So it's not a problem. It's not a problem because they're doing things for the master, they naturally get taken care of in the process. Right? So they dress nicely, they eat good food, they have nice places to stay, all these things are there. But it's according to their position, right? They're living in the big palace, but they're, you know, not living in the, how you say, you know, the emerald room or whatever it is that they have there. They're living, you know, in their quarters. You know, so we're not living in Nanda Bhavan. We're living in, you know, whatever place we have. So, yeah. The Vedas maintain that a kingdom should be governed for the purpose of satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead and should therefore be ruled by a representative of the Lord. The head of state should not be appointed if he is bereft of all Vedic knowledge. In other words, he shouldn't be appointed, whether it's that he is seen to be, you know, the next proper ruler by, you know, the previous ruler, and is handed down that way. Or you have a group of mature individuals who see to the running of the place, and so therefore they see to that, or they themselves run it, or it's elected by the people. It doesn't matter, but the point is it has to be someone who represents the Lord. That's the whole point. So technically, as by tradition, the monarchy works very nicely, but we really don't care what system you use, as long as the person is running it are Krishna conscious and working for to please the Lord. Does that make sense? So we're not attached to any one particular system. We're attached to that. It's done nicely for Krishna. So the principles of these administrative systems, that's what we're looking at. And so the easiest way to show that, and monarchy is showing it through, the monarchy. But those same principles can be applied anywhere into any system. But so in reality, if we say, oh, you know that system, that's old now. Now people use this. Then technically that means whoever said that doesn't actually know what administration is. They're taking it as some secondary form. You know, does that make sense? You know, oh yeah, before that people used to, you know, cook like this. Now they take it and, you know, dip it into liquid nitrogen and then they do something, and you know, like this. You know, so, you know, we don't use all that old-fashioned cooking, but only someone who's not a cook would say that. Because making things cold and making things hot, that's what cooking is all about. But you just have to know what's what. Ice cream you make cold, and other things you make hot. You know, does that make sense? So, you have to know what you're doing there. Right? So, in other words, they're going to freeze it for a moment, but then they're going to spend a lot of time cooking it. Right? So the principles of cooking still apply. Or you see, I haven't come across it, but I've heard about it, deep fried ice cream. Do you have that here? No, in Jaipur, it's something, one of the things they do. So they have ice cream cut into, you know, a particular size. They cut it into, you know, the serving size and keep it in really cold, right? Then after that, then they take it and then put it in their little spoon, drop it into the ghee just for a moment and take it out. So what happens, the outside melts a little bit. Then they put it back into the freezer, and then that freezes and gets hot. So you have ice cream with this layer on the outside of crunchiness. You know, generally don't think of crunchy and ice cream, but only the, how do you say, a culture that can invent chaat, you know, could do that, where it's all about opposites. You have soft things, you have crunchy things. You know, you have sweet things, you have sour, you have salty, you have pungent, you have chili, you know, you have all these different things. Does that make sense? It makes sense if you know what a chaat is. If you don't know what a chaat is, it's a problem. So, they come up with that, so they can have all these things, but it's not anything different from the standard principles of cooking. Any cook can understand it. Does that make sense? It's just that they're emphasizing a different area, they're using it in a particular way. And so, like that, then you can do. So, all these various management systems that are there, they're all based on the same principle of what is administration. If that's understood what administration is, then what you're doing then is simply an application of that. So, whatever you use, as long as it works, then that's fine. And they're saying, oh, no, this is the thing, those old ones don't work. That's like saying cooking doesn't work anymore. People aren't interested in cooking. They go to a restaurant, so therefore cooking's not important anymore. But what are they doing at the restaurant? Right? They're cooking. So it's still just as valuable, just that you don't know what to do with it. Yes?
Maharaj, can you elaborate more on is there any symptoms how we can see that things are done for Krishna? See that devotional service or service done for Krishna.
It's done for Krishna.
How we can, oh, like, service. Can we observe
then
that at
all? Service done. I thought he was saying Siddhanta. Okay. The service is done for Krishna. That's contemplation. That's then where we have heard the philosophy and then we apply that philosophy. So we have to then see, is the philosophy actually being transformed into devotional service? Is the devotional service including that proper understanding, that proper mentality? So that's done by the individual, that they, that's the meaning of self-realization. That you're looking at and seeing, I as myself, am I doing this? And if we are, then that's how we'll advance. And if we're not, then, oh, you're the rope, Walla. Then you do the bell thingy.
Yeah.
Okay. Because wherever I'm going, and hungry you made them for there?
Yeah.
Because then...
Made for you also.
Yes, right? Yes. No, so we have. And then when I went to hungry, outside the deity room, then I saw them. It was, and then I came here and saw them. Hey, okay.
So, and then...
Yeah, and then I saw you making this, and I put, you know, two and two together. And only took a while, but okay, thank you.
Like that. I'm still here.
Yes, he makes all those nice handles on the bells. You know, so many temples there.
All over Europe.
Yeah, that's good.
He made this cover for Shrimad Bhagavatam.
Oh, that one, okay.
Come back,
okay.
He's really talented.
Okay, very good. Thank you. So, it's through contemplation, that's why we have to be aware. That's why Prabhupada says, first be conscious, then be Krishna conscious. Because how do we be Krishna conscious if we're not conscious? You know, that's like saying, first wake up and then you can do service. Because if you're sleeping, how are you doing service? Right? That makes sense. You have your japa and your head's on the floor and you're all you hear is snoring. So. He's either chanting really fast or he's asleep. Does that make sense? So when we're conscious, then we can be Krishna conscious. But if we're not conscious, so that's why all these different things are there, is that we're being brought up with consciousnesses on all levels, because we're trying to do this for Krishna. Right? So that's why we want to be able to say, if we're saying we're doing administration, so we want to be able to do the best administration for Krishna. That means then we have the knowledge, we have the skills, we have the mentality, and we're applying that very nicely, you know, with the right, you know, in the present and all that, so that it works. Does that make sense? So someone say, oh, so it's just about the mentality, it's just about the philosophy. No, the point is you're going to apply that philosophy. That's the practical. That's why we know the knowledge and skills. But at the same time, you have that knowledge and skills, you forget about Krishna. Then what's the point? So many managers are there on the planet, and a good chance, when it comes to the material, there's always someone better. So even though you're doing something so nice, there will be someone better. And then I think they're doing something, it's just someone better than that. Yes.
Just one more question. Can we say that... That we're doing for Krishna, that our service, when our service is successful, or is it like when we're unsuccessful, so it wasn't Krishna conscious?
It's when the mentality is that you're doing it for Krishna is there, then you can say that's Krishna conscious. Mm. But when it's not, then you can say that it's not. Now, you do have the aspect that Krishna gives, because the ideal is that you're always conscious and always able to see things in connection to Krishna. So that's called sannyas. Right? So that's the ideal standard. But in case one's not always conscious, one is, you know, focusing on the detail and all that, and those moments there's not, as long as the result is going to be for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So when you remember, then you remember it's for Krishna, or when you're just focusing on that you get the result, once you get the result, you give that to Krishna, then it still works. So even if during the process you didn't remember Krishna, then it works out.
It's only when you come in.
You know, it's like in the book, you know, you don't want to come out the other side. This guy goes out and then he comes in and like, hey, good teaching machine there. Yeah, you just send the guy through this one door and he comes out that door already practicing devotion. Cool. Cool. Yeah, just don't go out and come back in this way.
What about coming in from the window?
I've heard about coming into the bathroom window. Yeah. That didn't work out so good, so. It wouldn't be a problem, because if it came in through the window, then you'd have to worry, because then when they leave, they'll steal your pants or something. But we don't wear pants, we wear dhotis. They're not going to steal dhotis. So no problem. See, we've solved, Krishna consciousness solved so many problems. Oh, you got a problem. I think they only steal ones you're not wearing. So. Okay. The head of a state should not be appointed if he is bereft of all Vedic knowledge. Right? So that's what you mean before. He's appointed means however he's appointed, he shouldn't be if he's not, if he doesn't have Vedic knowledge. In this verse is clearly stated, Veda Shastra Vid Arhati, that all high government posts are specially meant for persons who are well conversant with the teachings of the Vedas. Right? If people below that don't, it's not a problem, they're being trained. But, through their whole life process. But those who are in this position should already be trained in that, and then they're applying that into their government post. So it says high government post. It means your bureaucrats and all that, then they, they'll be citizens who are doing the best they can as civil servants. But those who are in the high posts, in other words, those who control and have the authority on how things are, decision-making and all those things on the higher level, they must be Krishna conscious. And then they naturally will then have influence on all those below them. So therefore, even if they're in a lower position in the government, then they're still functioning by Krishna conscious principles that the higher posts will take care of. Does that make sense? So it's like you have those who are there, so the more higher the thing, the more Krishna conscious should be there. So whoever's like, let's say, leading a temple or a project, they should be very Krishna conscious. And the main people who they work with, in doing that, they should be Krishna conscious. Then as you go down, you may have people that aren't as Krishna conscious. As long as they follow the directions of those higher Krishna conscious people, it will work. Does that make sense? So that's what we're making the distinction, is leadership means that you're going to have that principle. So if someone's just good at something and they're engaged in that, then that's fine, as long as then they're engaged how to be Krishna conscious. Yes? In the Vedas, there are definite instructions defining how a king, commander-in-chief, soldier, and citizen should behave. Unfortunately, there are many so-called philosophers in the present age who give instruction without citing authority. And many leaders follow their unauthorized instruction. Consequently, people are not happy. So people make something up because they see opportunities for people being happy. That happiness is based on sense gratification. So therefore, then they have their philosophies. Then if the government leaders follow those philosophies, then they'll be endeavoring that the people are satisfied on that central platform. But then the problem is you can't maintain community. When people are only worried about themselves, you don't have community. Right? And if they're only worried about community, then you don't have the individual. So the Vedas is that combination of those. You know about the whole process. You know about Krishna. Therefore, that's the commonality. That's what makes the community. Then within that, you are engaged as an individual, how you can be engaged by your nature. So you have both that combination of individual and community. Focus on one or the other, then you're not going to have. They both will be impersonal. So only the proper Vedic is not impersonal. Because if you just talk community, community means impersonal. When I talk about the community means impersonal. Right? We don't think of it that way, because we think it's in the lofty terms of how it's used. But when I say community, but what about the community? Who am I talking about? There's no individual I'm talking about. It's just a generic. So because we have to remember is impersonal doesn't mean there's no people. Impersonal just means it's not about a person. It's just about the group. Does that make sense? You know, I care for about the forest, I don't care about the trees. Right? Does that make sense? I'm working to see that the forest is not cut down. I'm not working on individual trees. So it doesn't, even though it talks about the individual and the individual rights, it's only in connection with the general community. So it's not that they care about that particular individual. They are part of the community, therefore. So it's not actually personal, though it sounds so personal, especially when you use all the nice, whatever's the latest contemporary wordings. It sounds very nice. But actually it's not. And then the other is just, you know, about the individual. It's just about, you know, how you say your sadhana, this and that, we don't care for all the other things. Then the thing is then, okay, that's nice that that's the soul, but what about the condition aspect of the soul? We're not addressing that either. So again, then it takes on that impersonal. So it's just a generic aspect. Does that make sense? So, yeah. So we have problems is that if we're not careful, the impersonalism actually comes into whatever we do. And we'll say, no, we're from the West, we're not Mayavadis, but then why does Prabhupada's mantra say, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschaktadesh? Does that sound like sense? Because in India, the impersonalists, they'll deal personally with you. Well, in the West, the personalists, they deal impersonally with you. You know, you're just part of the scene, that's why they deal with you. If you're part of this group and they support that, they'll deal with you. If you're not part of that, they won't deal with you. So it's not that they deal with individuals, they deal with you because you're part of the group. Does that make sense? I didn't burst any bubbles or something.
If I can ask a question.
Yes, the whole idea is this: how this works is that if you have a question that's relevant to the what we're discussing, at that time you raise your hand, we discuss it, you don't have to wait till the end, because there is no end on this.
I live in England now, and I don't necessarily follow politics, but of course I'm aware of certain things that are going on. And one of the recent developments is that Parliament has allocated, I think it's $800 billion, or an additional $3 billion to the Queen for her funds. And at the same time, a huge tower block recently caught fire and 80 people were killed. And your point about how the government is dealing with the community, so-called, because now there's an uproar. All the tower blocks that are made of this certain kind of material must be demolished. So now where are those people going to go? And there's a play on the opposing party now to take power. And they're using this impersonalism, actually, to their advantage. But you pointed out to me that actually it's a ruse.
It's a ruse, because they're impersonal, because yeah. It's just about their party. It's not about the country, it's not about the citizens of the country. The idea is that our political party is working for the government, for the country, therefore, anything that's good for our party is good for the country. That's the logic that they're using. But it's not so what's good for the country is what you do. Because it should be that, let's say, the opposing party comes up with an actual good plan that's actually good for the country, then the opposing party should actually support it because it is good for the country. And then if they come up with a good one, the other one should do. So it's just a matter of, you know, what kind of flavor or things are, or points of focus that they'll be on, but it should be overall for everybody. But no, if the opposition comes up, even if it's a fabulous plan, they'll oppose it and come up with some plan that's less because it's good for the party. So it's not actually about people. That's the whole point, is that even you say it's about the people, you know, by the people, of the people, for the people, but it's not actually. Does that make sense? You know, so that's always a problem. Right. You know, it's like I say, America, a good president comes in that people like, you know, then there's non-controversial president, then you'll say, you know, he's good, the system's working, even though only 40% of the people voted. But you'll just say, see, he's nice. But then if you get a president that's not popular, they'll say, yeah, he only got 40%. It means only 40% of the people voted, so he doesn't actually represent the people. But if that's the case, then the previous one who you said was good doesn't represent either. You know what I'm saying? So people just use these things for their own purpose, and not actually. That's what we have to be very careful with, is that not that I'm the manager, so what's good for me is good for, you know, what I'm managing. So what actually is good for that? And then there has to be that element of sacrifice. I'm working for that, so that itself is a difficulty. But then there's also my personal commitment, and so that's going to, you know what I'm saying? So we have to see all that. Then it works very nicely. So in the Vedic, if we're seeing all living entities connected to the Lord, then therefore the difficulty I'm going through, I understand that, I'm willing to make that sacrifice, but I also know what everybody else is doing and what sacrifice they're making. Does that make sense? So it's not that, oh, I'm the only one sacrificing and no one else is. So it's not that they're just part of the machinations. Yeah, there's not just part of that, the machinery. But they are playing their part in the role of the machinery, but they're not machinery. So only the Veda can get that balance properly. Otherwise people will go, oh no, but we're not just machines, we're this and that. Then it gets so much about that the seeming personal, the impersonal personal aspect, that then nothing works. And then they have to go back to just machinery working. And then things start to prosper and go up again. And once it's prosperous and that, people can sit back, then they'll go, oh, but this is the problem. Right? In other words, as things go down, people tend towards the conservative. As it goes up, then they turn towards the liberal. And then because the liberal, it goes back down again, because it goes back up. So only the Vedic, you can keep this balance, because you're doing both at once. You're worried about the individual, but the individual is functioning according to overall universal principles that hold everything together. So my connection with everybody else is through the Supreme, not through the specific that I'm doing. Right? So I can work with what I'm doing, at the same time I can see what I'm doing in context of the overall. That's what makes it work. Because otherwise, then, in the modern, that's always a weakness of the big corporations. They have people that just do this. That's their only job, is to see that one department does not destroy the other department. Because they can't see the bigger picture of the whole corporation. Does that make sense? So in the same way is that between them, you know, you have all these nations and they try to put together United Nations, and then you have the EU, and then, you know what I'm saying? They're always trying to make something to make it work. But unless you see its connection with the Supreme, there's always going to be a problem.
Does that make sense? So is there any value in a devotee following politics, especially a monarchical system of government? Is there any value in supporting that prima facie?
It means based on what? No, I'm saying, I mean,
based on the fact that it's still
going. Do you mean gaining knowledge and supporting means by reading the Sun?
No, definitely not that. But from
an
analytical study, if you will.
As a study, but what one will do with the study.
Right.
So unless one can somehow or another have influence, that means high government posts, and the individuals in them learn about Krishna consciousness and this greater thing, then you could say it has some meaning. But otherwise, unless it's going to have some impact on what we're doing, what does it matter? Like Lord Chaitanya didn't get involved in the government. Because as long as one can practice, you know, God consciousness, what does it matter who's in power? Like that. But if there's going to have things that are going to get in the way of that, you might keep up on that. Like, I think it was just recently then in a bit farther east than here, then they started making rules about, you know, doing sankirtan and other public displays of Krishna consciousness. So you might want to keep up on that to see what's happening, and then work with people to, you know, from the advantage of the democratic process is then if enough people support, they change it. Not that they would like to, it's just an obstacle for them from getting done whatever they want. But at least it allows, you know, proper consciousness to be practiced. So only if it has that kind of effect that it's there. But otherwise, to get involved, then what are you going to do? You know, because even if you wanted to have an effect, you know, as if you already started at a younger age and were very expert at something by the time you're 20, and then you do that until you're 50 or 60, then maybe you'd be in a position to have some influence. But then, you know, you have a few years to do that, and you have so many restrictions. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, what do you call it? The American, you know, head of state. How he would talk before, once he's president, then that's not protocol. You have to act like a gentleman, so you don't hear him talking that way. So this, you know, in other words, you're going to be restricted by what that is. So you can only say so much. It's like, it's probably little known that, what's his name? The Bush Jr., he was a born-again Christian. So all his meetings, is, you know, it's all opens with something about a prayer or something with Jesus, closes with that. But as a president, you never see that. So you don't even know. He's just the president. So president stuff is what you see. But his personal life, that he was, you know, wouldn't have a meeting without bringing up Jesus, then no one's going to know about that. So even if you're nice and Krishna conscious and this and that, then how much effect you'll have? You know what I'm saying? So for... you know, how you say 15, 20 years of more of training, 25 years of training, and then 30 years in the field. If you were trained for 20 years in Krishna consciousness and then went out and preached to all these influential individuals, in 30 years you might have more than one person favorable. While if you did it yourself, you'd be the only one, and how much can you do? Does that make sense? So that's why we're not interested to change it from the inside, because what's there to change? You know what I'm saying? If you don't have anything, then... You know what I'm saying? There's nothing to work with. But if you preach to people who are influential, then they already are influential, then they can have an influence. You know what I'm saying? So if we wanted to... We started off just as some, you know, how you say, somebody, and in their garage is doing music and all that, and then we think, yes, I'll become, you know, I'll preach the music and all that, and how many people are coming to the show that you're at, right? And so how many years you'll put in, and this and that. Well, at the same time, is you had some people who were not necessarily musicians, or, you know, familiar with music, or, you know, even because they live with themselves, they preach to musicians, and then the next thing you know is they're making songs or albums that are about Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? That's what we do. If you're already a musician and you can do that, great. But why would you try to do that? Why would you try to be a musician or a politician or an academic or any of these, if that's not what you already are? If that's what you're doing, that's your nature, and you continue that, fine. Then you're Krishna conscious. But to think that I will become that, to affect Krishna consciousness in that field, it's like, when is that ever work? You know what I'm saying? Better to preach. You understand? The Buddhists did not become kings. They just preached and made Ashok a Buddhist. He took care of the rest. Right? And then how'd Shankaracharya get rid of it? By preaching. Then he made them all into Hindus by preaching. Does that make sense? So Narottam Das Thakur, by preaching, then the king in Vishnupur became a devotee. So then he made it the rule that the kingdom is Vaishnava. So then everybody had that proper understanding of God consciousness. You know, so whoever, does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that we don't have to become. If we already are, then fine. Does that make sense? But if you're not, then why put in that effort? You like that field, preach to the people in that field. Because the point is as a preacher, you automatically have some position of respect. But if you want to go into it as one of them, you know, get in line, you know, behind the other, you know, 100,000 people. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay? Yeah. In other words, unless you're in a position that has some effect on that, then there's no importance. So, I think it was in Calcutta, temple president, and something happened in the government, and they didn't know about it. It had an effect on the temple. Prabhupada said, "Why don't you know?" So in this way, then he was expecting those who are in a position to deal with those things and who are responsible for those errors, then they would know. There's not an excuse there for to read news all day. Right? It was just you see what are major things, what's different, you know, the things, you know, this servant ran off with the gold jewelry. You don't need to read all that stuff. It's just simply what effect policy of the government is going to have on Krishna consciousness, or a trend of the flavor of the people, or what their mood is, and stuff like that. Then it has some value. Does that make sense? Otherwise, then it's just the job. The Bhagavad theory of dialectical communism set forth by Karl Marx and followed by communist governments is not perfect. According to Vedic communism, no one in the state should ever starve. Presently, there are many bogus institutions which are collecting funds from the public for the purpose of giving food to starving people, but these funds are invariably misused. Misused, I think it's a standard, these big organizations like UNICEF and some of these others, like that, 90% of what the donations that are given go into administration because they have such a big organization. So that's what he's meaning here. It's not directly getting down so easily. Right. According to the Vedic instructions, the government should arrange things in such a way that there will be no question of starvation. So they're taking care of people that are starving, but are they taking care of why they're starving? Does that make sense? So in other words, if one is dealing with the Lord and his creation, how he says, why there'll be starvation. And if there is someone who's by karma hungry, then you take care and feed them. But it shouldn't be that things go on because of other, you know, economic or other things like that. And that causes starvation. That has to be adjusted. Does that make sense? So that's an imperfection. They're dealing with the problem, they're dealing with the result of a problem, not a problem. That's why he says it will be misused inside, and it's also their purpose is not fully there. So, in the Srimad Bhagavatam it's stated that a householder must see to it that even a lizard or a snake does not starve. Whatever is in what you call yours, you have to take care of. Right, according to their nature and according to how they fit into the scene. So, it's not that they're fed in the house, they're fed outside the house. Yes. In actuality, however, there's no question of starvation because everything is the property of the Supreme Lord. And he sees to it that there is ample arrangement for feeding everybody. In the Vedas, Katha Upanishad 2.2.13, it said, Eko Bahunam Yogi Dhati Kama. The Supreme Lord supplies the necessities of life to everyone, and there is no question of starvation. If anyone starves, it is due to the mismanagement of the so-called ruler, government, or president. Right? In other words, the planet provides everything. Whoever is born here, whatever they're supposed to have, it goes along with it. But it'll be the problem with the government. They're not arranging things properly, therefore then there's starvation. In a sense, you know, there's some civil war, there's some weirdo thing going on, they're not distributing things or drive prices up, then they get, you know, rid of foodstuffs. In other words, if it's present, it means it's supposed to be eaten. Does that make sense? So if they're throwing it out or misusing it, then the people can starve. So just because it grows in one place doesn't mean that you don't take care of people in another. It's not that it grows our place so then we can do with it whatever we like. No, we can do whatever, we can do with it as is directed by the authority of the Lord. So then you have stock, you have a certain amount. Once you have more than that, that's what's given away to areas that don't have. this is supposed to be. Does that make sense? It is clear, therefore, that a person who is not well versed in the Vedic injunctions, Veda Shastra Vid, should not run for election as president, governor, etc. Formerly, kings were Rajarshis, which meant that although they were serving as kings, they were as good as saintly persons because they could not transgress any of the injunctions of the Vedic scriptures and would rule under the direction of great saintly persons as Brahmanas. So that's Kshatriya. Kshatriya means they follow all the rules and have all the same knowledge as the Brahmanas, just they apply it in the practical, application. Does that make sense? Well, the Brahmins know it, then they'll apply it on a small scale on what they're doing. But the government will apply it on the grand scale. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. So in mentality of Shastric injunction, they're the same. That makes sense. So if you see Brahmins or administrators aren't interested in the Shastric version, or the Vedic version, then that means it's a lack of training. A lack of understanding, because these two will always follow that if they're trained. Does that make sense? In the business community, then they like to, because they know that by following they get more profit in the long run. And does that make sense? That would be the aspect. But at the same time, as sometimes in shorter term profit, they may not be as attentive. It can happen. Right, the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, they won't, even at the risk of difficulty for themselves. They won't transgress. That makes sense. Just like in, you're following Dharma, Yudhishthira Maharaj is following. So therefore in the gambling match, Dharma wasn't really being followed, but he was still following Dharma because he had been invited there by his senior, Dhritarashtra. Right, who took care of him when they were young, and so he's seen in like a fatherly position. And he's the king, he's authorizing it, so therefore then he's following it. But otherwise political efficiency, then he would have either denied the match, or as he sees it's going crazy and all that, then when Bhima wanted to pick up his club and go kill everybody, he would have allowed him to, because everybody in the hall was having fun. For them it was like entertainment. So when you're being entertained, then your mood is different, right? So you're not actually in a good fighting spirit, right? But Bhima, he's angry as anything, right? So if he had picked up his club, who would have been able to defend himself? Right? And first he would have gone after Duryodhana. So once he solved that problem, then most all other problems are solved. But he could have on the spot killed, you know, Duryodhana, Shakuni, and Karna. No question. Like that. Then how far we get after that, then people figure it out, then they start to get the mood, but I think Bhima would have done quite well. But at least he would have solved the problem of Duryodhana. But they didn't, they followed what's supposed to be done. That's the difference. Does that make sense? So in a culture where everybody follows, then you know it's easier to do. In a culture where nobody follows, it's harder to do. But that's what makes the principle. So it's not just the modern practical business that, okay, what makes the profit immediately? It's you have to also see the longer run. If you use these shorter terms, what effect will that have? If it won't have a problem, then they're used. Right? So that's why they have Dharma, Artha, and Niti. Niti would be the smallest circle, what's immediately happening and just dealing with it, adjusting the situation. Artha will be seeing a bigger picture of how to use that situation to make profit. Dharma will see what's my duty within this situation. So what's my duty, therefore within that, then how to manipulate it that it gives profit, and then what's the specific details of how I deal with it right now. So that will be, then they'll use all three. Duryodhana, they just use Niti. So that's why all the problems come up. But running the country, he used them all. But as dealing with the Pandavas, he just used Niti. So that's why you see it such a big one. So in other words, he's the one saying, just be practical for Buddha. According to this arrangement, modern presidents, governors, and chief executive officers are all unworthy of their posts because they are not conversant with Vedic administrative knowledge. They do not take direction from great saintly persons and Brahmanas. So, Prabhupada's not commenting on what system they're using. It's not a comment on democracy or monarchy or you know, oligarchy or whatever you want to use. What he's commenting on is on the qualification of who's in the position. Because whatever you use, if the qualification is there, you can use it so it will be properly used for administrative purpose. Right? People will become God conscious. But if you're not God conscious, then it'll be just generally political or economic or influence, these kind of things. It's not seen in the balance. Because right? Only if you're God conscious, you can balance all the elements of state that you actually have to deal with. Make sense? No? Yes?
Just as a follow-up, is it prudent then to see, for example, the current president of the United States as someone who possesses great sukriti and is appointed by Krishna to be in this position?
It's not appointed by Krishna, it's that he has the karma to be in this position. Mm-hmm. How much he's qualified is another thing. But the point is you have that and you have what the people, what their karma is. And so therefore they'll get a leader that matches theirs and who has the karma to be in that position will be there. So it's all made, arranged. But if the people are educated enough that they choose a leader who is educated enough, then it will be, the choice will be amongst those who are educated. Right, so it's not just who's good at talking or you know who's got more attitude, but it's who actually has the proper understanding and can practically apply it. Because the point is, in when you're dealing with governance, you have to be practical. You have to be able to apply it. That's the difference. The Brahmins are giving that. They may or may not be able to apply it, right? But they know what it is, and they know it in relationship to practical application. Not that they could do. Because the mentality is such as they would rather do their sadhana, you know, rather study and teach than they would to administer. Like Vashishtha, he could run the whole thing, but he doesn't. You know, he has 10,000 disciples. He's managing that, or Durvasa Muni. He's got 10,000 disciples. Or Vishwamitra, he's also got 10,000. So they're all excellent, you know, administrators. But on that level, you know, the knowledge, the science of administration, so they can move with kings, give advice to kings. But at the same time, as so, and you see it in their practical, just in their, what's around them, they're managing 10,000 people. That's a big management. So if you are personally responsible for 10,000 that you actually sing, then that you would be considered quite good. But at the same time, they only advise the kings. They don't run kingdoms themselves. Is that so? Yeah. So that's that. That's the whole. That's where the difference comes from. And it's not. So it's not that the Brahmin can't do it. They're just not interested to do it. Does that make sense? It's not that the administrator has no interest in you know Krishna consciousness or all this knowledge. They have that. It's just they're able to administrate, and they're willing to do that. So you get this. And so that's why those two go together. You always see him talking about Brahmins and Kshatriyas. They always go together. You know, or you know, who's leading the thing and then who's their advisors. Does that make sense? You know, or they're able to relate to it and they can give it in the context that someone who's managing can deal with. Like Narad Muni, he's explaining how to run the kingdom and everything to Yudhishthira Maharaj. But we never hear of him managing anything. He has an ashram, but there's no detail about how big it is and what. Because the point with Narad Muni is not about his administrative ability. You know, it's about his knowledge of preaching. That's what he's known for. But he has an ashram, so there must be something going on, but there's no focus on that. So, yeah.
Yes. How to deal with that approach, which is very popular among politicians. For instance, one prime minister of our country once said that the country should be managed the same way as a business. And in the States now, it's the same approaches. Mm-hmm. So, because it seems from the point of practicality that managers who get things done but are more with Baishi mentality, that practicality is on that side, how we should respond, how we should see that approach.
The means you have the aspect is it's just a matter of what do they mean by that. So if he's meaning run it like a business means that you're there, you're seeing to the profit, you're seeing that everything's prospering, then you could say yes, it's the same, but they won't use the business model in that, it's just about profit.
Impersonal.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, it's not that. It's about protecting the citizens. Then if they put in that same, like nowadays people put in so much effort and everything for business, so at least that much effort should be put in. Then you can say, nice. But we're just saying is you should run it like a big business, then that's not going to satisfy anyone. So because if you're supposed to protect the citizens because of the economic elements, then people won't be protected. Economy will develop, but the point is this, you can develop economy in so many different ways. You don't have to develop it in a way that makes the citizens insecure. But it's one of the ways you can do it, and it works quite quickly because people are, imperfect senses, illusion, madness, and tend to make, mistakes in cheating like this. So you can take advantage of these for business, or you can do business based on things that aren't that. Does that make sense? It's just like in Vrindavan, you have Loy Bazaar, right? And so from what it was, 30, 40, 50 years ago, and what it is now, it's quite developed. Right? But they're just selling things that are used in devotional life. That makes sense. So, the clothes that we use, the, beads, deities, books. Right? So, and so it's just, it'll be based on things that people require. Well, the modern is more on things people don't require. Difference is what they don't require, and you entice them based on their material desire. Then it can have a quickness to it, but it doesn't have it's harder to maintain the steadiness, because if you're making profit off a certain volume in the market, if that volume goes down, then how do you make the profit? So it may go up quickly, but it can also go down quickly. So that's the difficulty. People just don't get interested. They stay home. They don't invest. They don't spend. That day the market really goes down. So that's a difficulty. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. On the Vedic is you're making money off of things that people need. So therefore, because they need them, it's guaranteed they'll buy. So that's your volume. But it's a slower. And so, things have more value, things therefore, because these things you don't need is an artificial value. So does that make sense? If you need it, then it has a more realistic value. Because you put it in, it's something that's required, so then you put it into context. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. It's just like, let's say, a bottle of water. Okay. That costs, for a liter that costs you 10. How much does it cost? A bottle of water here.
1 euro.
€1. €1, okay.
It's okay, you can drink tap water. You can drink tap water.
Yeah, but I'm just saying for areas as you cross the Baltic, ocean, then tap water is less viable. Like that, So then, that's €1. Now if I just stick some fruit or grains in there and let it sit there for some months or years without, too much investment or things like that, now that same liter may cost me, 50, 70, 100 euros. So the whole thing, people don't need that. So the prices are inflated. It doesn't require that. You can make it out in your backyard in the bathtub. You know, it doesn't cost you anything. Just put it out there and leave it out there. And then after some time, you come and strain it and haribol. You know what I'm saying? So it's artificial. These things are created. So the high price and things are things that are artificial, that you don't require. Things that you require have to be cheap. Potatoes, they can't be too cheap. I mean, too expensive. If they are, then you have riots because people actually need them. But if they raise the price on those Gucci boots, there's no riots because you don't need that. So then the business has to be balanced with everything else because you have dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Right? So those four have to be balanced on the material side, but those have to be all in support of the primary, which is bhakti. Because that's the real profit for the living entity. But since he's here now, he has to maintain himself, therefore he does that through dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So you have to create that balance. So say you run the country like a business, meaning with that attention, okay. You know, you could say it, another way you could say it, when you say, you know, running a country is like raising a child, but you know, that's not as popular these days, so therefore you can't use that example. You know what I'm saying? So whatever is the way to get across the point that it takes endeavor and takes responsibility and focus, then that works. But if it's actually run as a business, then that's not what it's for. Businessmen run businesses. Government doesn't have to run a business. Because if the government's only doing what it does to get the taxes as a profit, what's the point? Then what do you do with the money? Why is it a government? Then you just say it's a business. You know, how you say, Finland Private Limited. So whatever it is, or Public Limited, or Public Unlimited, or you know, whatever it is that you know your particular local flavor is. But it's not. It has to be balanced with everything else. Because if you have money, you know, but don't follow Dharma, then that money will be lost. If you have money, it's not engaged to properly engage the senses, then what's the point of having it? You know, if you have money and don't spend it like a miser, that's not considered very intelligent. Otherwise, a miser is as good as a poor person. Because the facilities they enjoy, what they do is that they don't give in charity, they don't live a proper lifestyle, the family doesn't live a proper lifestyle. So why even have the money? They're living the life of being poor, but they have money, so that's really strange. You know what I'm saying? So, like that. But if on that you're not actually functioning on the platform that you're the soul, you're only functioning on the platform of the body and mind, that's also a waste, because that means you don't have complete knowledge, because unless you have more knowledge that you understand about, you know, reincarnation and all these things, then how do you actually function in a long-term way? You know, it's like they'll say, okay, on certain, you call it environmental things or economic things, is that we work something out now that works, but there's major problems coming up on the horizon that after, you know, 20, 30, 50 years, that will have to be addressed. It means that they could address them now to alleviate the problem, but things are working now, so they'll do a little bit, but the seriousness of it will be, you know, we'll leave that for our children or grandchildren to work out. But if you understand the law, you know, the law of karma and reincarnation, who's going to be the children and the grandchildren? So therefore, it's going to be your problem then. Why not solve it now? You know? So it's just a different approach, is that? Because of his disobedience to the orders of the Vedas and the Brahmanas, King Vena, Pritumar's father, was killed by the Brahmanas. Pritumar's therefore knew very well that it behooved him to rule the planet as the servant of saintly persons and Brahmanas. Because it's just, there's a method. You follow the method, it works. You don't follow the method, it doesn't work. Text 46. The Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras eat their food by virtue of the Brahmanas' mercy. It is the Brahmanas who enjoy their own property, clothe themselves with their own property, and give charity with their own property. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipped with the words Namo Brahmanya Devaya, which indicate that the Supreme Lord accepts the Brahmanas as worshippers of the gods. The Supreme Lord is worshipped by everyone, yet to teach others he worships the Brahmins. Everyone should follow the instructions of the Brahmins, for their only business is to spread the Shabda Brahma, or the Shabda Brahma, or Vedic knowledge, all over the world. Wherever there is a scarcity of Brahmins to spread Vedic knowledge, chaos throughout human society results. Since Brahmins and Vaishnavas are direct servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they do not depend on others. In actuality, everything in the world belongs to Brahmins, and out of their humility, the Brahmins accept charity from the Kshatriyas or kings, and the Vaishyas or merchants. Everything belongs to the Brahmins, but the Kshatriya government and the mercantile people keep everything in custody. Like bankers, whenever the Brahmins need money, the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas should supply it. It is like a savings account of money, which the depositor can draw out at his will. The Brahmins, being engaged in the service of the Lord, have very little time to handle the finances of the world, and therefore the riches are kept by the Kshatriyas and the kings, who are to produce money upon the Brahmins' demand. Actually, the Brahmins or Vaishnavas do not live at others' costs. They live by spending their own money, although it appears that they are collecting this money from others. Because if you're doing service for Krishna, then it's all Krishna's, because that's the way it is. Everything's Krishna's. It's in the custody of somebody, but it's Krishna's. And so then the Brahmins and Vaishnavas are working for Krishna's pleasure as servants, like I said before, the servants are serving the master. So therefore, when Krishna's facilities are required, then they may go to these others who are the custodians of Krishna's money, and then get that and use it in Krishna's service. Now, whether they understand their custodians or not, that's another thing. Right? So in the Vedic age, they would understand it. In the modern age, it may be less understood. So that's why the Brahmins are they just depend on Krishna. So whatever Krishna sends, that's what they take, and that works for them. So in that way, they're independent, because they thought, oh, but then you're so dependent upon the temple and this and that, so they're independent, because it's Krishna's. So it's all Krishna's anyway. So someone says, oh, this is my house, oh, this is my facilities. But at any moment, the material nature is there, and the modes change, and things change. Right? So even though someone says, I'm independent, and in the temple you're dependent, and actually, no. So if you're Vaishnavas, you're independent. And if you're not, then you're actually dependent. Then you're dependent upon others. Because if you're dependent on the Lord, you're independent. Makes sense? So that's the mentality we should have, is this that of independence. Kshatriyas and Vaishyas have no right to give charity, for whatever they possess belongs to the Brahmins. Therefore, charity should be given by the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas under the instructions of the Brahmins. Unfortunately, at the present moment, there is a scarcity of Brahmins, and since the so-called Kshatriyas and Vaishyas do not carry out the order of the Brahmins, the world is in a chaotic condition. So that's what Prabhupada says. You want to establish for an ashram, the first thing is Brahmins. Right? If that's there, then everyone can get trained, everything else will work. Because those who have the Kshatriya nature, the administrative nature, the artist nature, they have that nature anyway. They're going to do something in these areas. Now, with training, then they'll do something in a scientific way, an actual beneficial way. So without education, you don't actually gain anything. So one of the biggest points of management is education. If that's there, then things develop. You tell someone do something, they do it. And as long as you're telling them, they're doing it. But the problem is they don't know why they're doing it. If they know why they're doing it, then they'll tend to do it better, because they can make decisions on the time. At the time, you can't be there. You tell them what to do, they have to do it. So if they know actually what they're doing, why they're doing, how it connects to Krishna, how it's beneficial for the, you know, Krishna consciousness, then they'll actually be better. So that's the whole point. Leadership means that one educates. That always has to be there. So either one's doing oneself, one has others doing it, but one's seeing it's happening. So. The second line of this verse indicates that the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras eat only by the virtue of the Brahmins' mercy. In other words, they should not eat anything which is forbidden by the Brahmins. The Brahmins and Vaishnavas know what to eat, and by their personal example, they do not eat anything which is not offered first to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They eat only prasad, or remnants of the food offered to the Lord. The Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras should eat only Krishna prasad, which is afforded them by the mercy of the Brahmins, because they give the instructions, they tell how to do it, so therefore following that instruction, then everyone takes prasad, or they're offering to the deities, and then we get the prasad. In any case, whether it's the that direct benefit or through the instructions, like that, but it's by the mercy of the Brahmanas and this Vedic knowledge that we're able to get benefit. So, they cannot open slaughterhouses and eat meat, fish, or eggs, or drink liquor, or earn money for this purpose without authorization. In the present age, because society is not guided by Brahminical instruction, the whole population is only absorbed in sinful activities. Consequently, everyone is deservedly being punished by the laws of nature. This is the situation in this age of Kali. What was your idea? You wanted to have a break in between? Or?
Well, today we will have a little bit short because there's marriage ceremony after, so it will be until 1:45.
Okay, so we just have a little more, okay.
So, but if you want, we can have a small break, though.
Means, oh, now?
For example,
is there an advantage to having a small break?
Maybe 5 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, or what, you know. Yeah. So, verse 40. 7. Good march, continue. How can such persons who have rendered unlimited service by explaining the path of self-realization in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and whose explanations are given for our enlightenment with complete conviction and daily evidence, be repaid except by folded palms containing water for their satisfaction? Such great personalities can be satisfied only by their own activities, which are distributed amongst human society out of their unlimited mercy. Purport. Great personalities of the material world are very eager to render welfare service to human society. But actually, no one can render better service than one who distributes the knowledge of spiritual realization in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So that's something that should be explained. Otherwise, there's the tendency to think that, oh, we're not doing welfare work, but actually we're doing the highest welfare work. Right? Because training someone in God consciousness, how they can connect their life to Krishna consciousness, that's actually the most beneficial, because that benefits the soul. Other things are only going to benefit the body and mind. They're not going to go beyond that. Does that make sense? So that's the aspect that's there. One has to be convinced that Krishna consciousness, that's the real welfare work. And these others that are done because it's a matter of course. Right? To be Krishna conscious, you have to eat, therefore then there's food distribution. Does that make sense? So but that's the whole concept. That was to be Krishna conscious, that's why food is being distributed. That's why then the food that's being distributed is prasad. So then there's an understanding of this. So, all living entities are within the clutches of the illusory energy, forgetting their real identity, they hover in material existence, transmigrating from one body to another in search of a peaceful life. Since these living entities have very little knowledge of self-realization, they are not getting any relief, although they are very anxious to obtain peace of mind and some substantial happiness. Because the material world can't afford that there'll be this continuity of happiness and satisfaction. It's not made that way. It's actually made that you'll be dissatisfied. Why? Because everything's in connection with gross matter. And the soul actually can't be satisfied by gross matter. There's the idea, I will be, that's what every living entity here thinks that. But it's not actually working out for anybody, nor has it ever actually worked out for anybody. Right? There's no evidence you can say, is this person was happy in history. Right? They'll have moments, yes, everybody has a moment. But in reality, there's no one that was known for being happy. Someone's known for being wealthy, powerful, influential, have beautiful, you know, renounced, knowledgeable, all these different things. But is anybody known in history for being happy? No. There's not one person. So that's the point. So if in the last 3,000 years of Vedic, I mean modern history, no one person has been considered happy, then is it actually working? Right? It's designed like this. Because what is it doing? It's trying to make us, the idea is we would get frustrated with being absorbed in the secondary dealings with the world, and then turn our attention to the primary, which is the Lord. Because it's His potency that makes everything work. Right? But if we just look at these other aspects of the Lord, it still won't bring satisfaction, because the Lord, the living entity, needs to be functioning on the principle as a person. Right? So if you're dealing with Brahman or Paramatma, you're not addressing the Lord so much as a person. Excuse me. But you're not addressing yourself as a person either. Understand? So there can't be any real satisfaction. It may be a little bit more pleasant situation, but it's still going to be a problem. But it's only when one actually takes up God consciousness in as devotional service that the process actually becomes viable. Then that's what it's there. So Maya has designed it like that, that she'll harass you with the secondary as long as you think it's the secondary that's going to make you happy. When you think it's Krishna consciousness will make me happy, then the secondary, whatever position it's in, whether it's nice or not, will like it. Does this make sense? Right. So now if we have that understanding, and we have that practice, that's then what we can give to others. Right? Because otherwise then so much talk, you know, they need this, so that facility, this will make us have it, that, we don't have this, that, people's rights, they say people's rights, government's obligations, you know, it's balanced, right? Rights and obligations. My rights, your obligations. You know. Works for me, hey. You know, what's to complain about? You know. But that's the whole point, is it's not designed properly. So if we understand this, we live like this, this is what we get to the others. That's what leadership means. Leadership means we practice it, then by our practice, others will take it up. Right? It's not just the management, it's the whole attitude you want to get. Because otherwise, if you organize, and this mood is not transferred, and then we'll find there's a problem. Right? The more we focus on management, you see is that the more focus also comes up as the concept of succession. Right? Who's going to carry on after us? But where did we get it from? We're coming in this long line of preachers and how you say ISKCON managers. Not necessarily, right? So what we gain from? We gain that from Prabhupada, right? Prabhupada then gives that to devotees like this. So that means he's preaching this, he's living it, he's preaching it. And then those with managerial abilities, they come forward as a service to Krishna and then do that, and then things are organized. So what's essential? The essential is the training in God consciousness. Training and skills, that's not what will cause succession. Because just because someone knows doesn't mean they won't change things. Right? As society goes, things change. Why? Because the mentality changes. So the main thing to get across is the mentality, the mood of Krishna consciousness. How to apply Krishna consciousness in your life, in whatever area of ability one has. That's what leadership is for. Seeing what someone's nature, seeing that they're able to apply that in Krishna consciousness. So that Krishna consciousness aspect is the main thing. Details of management, you know, come after that. Not that it's not known, not that it's not practiced, but the point is that if someone knows the proper attitude and is Krishna conscious, there's a lot less to manage. Right? But if you don't, then management becomes what you have to use to try to, you know, solve the problems.
Yes. How can you understand, there's this, we have the nature and we have the ability to apply the nature, but also Krishna consciousness, like Srila Prabhupada said, that the highest thing is to do the needful, or develop the service attitude.
Yes.
And it means that actually it goes beyond just serving, according to one's nature, how to train the devotees.
The point is, it's like that. You gave the key there, is that that surrender to Krishna, that mood of service, that's what you have to train people in. Means then to engage that mood, then they have a particular service and they need some technical training. Right? Does that make sense? You know. But the point is the mood of service, that's what you're trying to teach. That's what the organization is for. In other words, before, then Vaishnavas would work much of the time without much of organization. And individuals would be practicing, other individuals who saw the importance of God consciousness came searching, found them, and were trained in this way, carried on. But if you want things to expand in a dynamic or very big way, then you need to organize. But all you're organizing is that people get association of devotees. Right? And that association is then that seriousness in Krishna consciousness. That's what you're actually given. That's why it says that's the greatest one who distributes this knowledge of spiritual realization. Right? So that's no one can render better service. That's what we're doing. So we're organizing things so we can distribute the knowledge of spiritual activities in relation to the personality of God. That's what we're doing. That's what a temple is. That's what a farm project is, or a restaurant, or any ISKCON project. It is a facility that through that particular arrangement, then you can give opportunity for association. That's what you're trying to do. It's not to make money, it's not to just be in control, it's not to become popular, it's not any of those things. It's to give that association. Does that make sense? Being popular is really overrated, because who's actually popular? We say there's so many popular people, but they're popular amongst whom? You know, like that. You know, Lady Gaga has, I think, I don't know, 50,000 followers on Twitter. You know, is that the group you want to be with? You know, stuff like that. It's probably, it's one thing if she showed up in an outfit made out of pumpkins or something, but that's not what she showed up in. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, popular is overrated. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the thing, is that presenting Krishna consciousness so that others can then take it up in that advanced association. Then the details, then that according to one's ability, that's what one does. So then in that training, you're training primarily the primary understanding. And then to express that, you have the secondary. So that way, whatever skills someone has or potential, that you bring out by then rendering service and some instruction. But the main thing is that all the way through is that while they're performing it, if the attitude is good, that's encouraged. If it's not, then one trains in that area. Does that make sense? But that's what one has to see. Then everybody becomes a preacher at the same time as they're performing their particular skill according to their nature. Does that make sense? Yes.
Yeah, I just remember this point. Jayananda Prabhu was, he did Anikara service and what was needed. And he one of the guests came and he thought he was the garbage man at the temple, dealing with the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so Krishna conscious. And his guest was again, the garbage, who deals with the garbage in this place, is such a person that, and he joined because of that.
It impresses me. People are impressed not by the technical skills and that they have, because it's like no matter what you make, there's something better. You know, okay, we build a new temple and it costs, $1 million something, but someone else has built something that cost $100 million. And then after some time there's something more. It's just like the tallest building in the world, someone has it, and then after a while there's another one, and it keeps moving around. So that's not why people come. They're not impressed by that. What they're impressed by is the mood and attitude in which we do things. That's the thing that impresses me. Because the world of being materially prosperous, that goes on all around them. I mean, if somebody comes to the temple and joins because it looks more opulent than their house, then okay, but that's artarti, you know. So it's hot then, but you still, if you don't correct that mentality, then you know what will be their motive for doing things. So in other words, they're impressed by the Krishna consciousness and how devotees are happy, because that's what they're looking for. We're thinking, oh, we'll impress them by how well we're organized, or how well we do this, and we don't do harinams, we don't do books, then people will like us. No, they like us because we're happy. Right? You know, Prabhupada said, we took hippies and made them into happies. So that was the thing. Devotees were happy. That's the main thing that draws. We're thinking, well, why aren't we getting devotees? Because we're not happy. We're happy that that's what people are looking for. You know? So, in a sense, they don't want anything else. It means these material things, according to their nature, they'll get something anyway. And whatever they have, they're not happy anyway. Right? So, like that. So they see is that the relationships, the dealings, these kind of things, the consciousness, this is actually more valuable. So intelligent people actually catch this, that it's intelligent people who take up Krishna consciousness. Right? The unintelligent don't. What we mean here, intelligent means they can perceive something higher. They can appreciate something higher. Unintelligent means they don't. So they're just good at the skills. So the unintelligent are good at skills or not good at skills. And they're only going to look at skills and all that, so they won't be impressed anyway. Right? Because even if you have, and it's better, they'll just be jealous. If it's less, then definitely, you know, why should they be interested in us? So, but being Krishna conscious and being satisfied in that Krishna consciousness, being committed to that, that's what he says here. So that's how we attract. And then, you know, we do things because it pleases Krishna. Keeping the temple clean, that's what pleases Krishna. And therefore, because it's clean, orderly, and all that, people notice that. But it's only part of what's there, so the real point is that the devotees are happy. That's the thing, they're satisfied, they have answers, they deal, the mood's nice. And because of that, then that's why they're attracted. And then because, as we said before, is that if you have that mood, you're teaching that to others, then anybody who comes to contact, you'll teach them also. Like, you know, it's, I think it's one of the contemporary queries is, how do we train the community? But the point is if you're trained, then where's the problem? And we think, no, there has to be a training, how to train community. No, you practice what you want the community to do, and then you're going to mention it. Right? In other words, what you're into is what you talk about. So if you practice Krishna consciousness, then that's what you talk about. Does that make sense? And so therefore, that's how people will pick it up. Because you'll notice it. You'll see it in how they live, how they like, you do programs, you do these different things. And then it's there. So it's not that there's a technique. It's that you're doing, you give that to others. What you have, you can give. What you don't have, you can't give. Is that
yes. Maharaj, a question about mood of service, that some devotees can develop this habit, that first service, and then I do my sadhana, then I do my rounds, and just all like secondary, late in the evening. First is just be practical doing that. So is it like, is there any contradiction if that's done in this good mood, or is it like a distraction?
Point is if we're engaged in service, then the other things will come. Mm. Right? If one's engaged in service and wants to be careful to avoid offenses and that, then naturally, then everything will develop. Does that make sense? So keeping somebody engaged, so if they can appreciate the sadhana, because we do have the whole sadhana before we get into so many other services, right? Then one can do. If not, then someone can do some practical service. Otherwise, then we have practical service later in the day. Does that make sense? So whatever works that the person's engaged. The main thing, if they're engaged in the association of devotees, that's how they'll advance. Mm. But if they're not engaged, then probably won't get very far. Mm. You know, especially if we're not engaging them because all the things we do are strange and we're not explaining to them Krishna consciousness because all they won't understand, then, you know, okay, they're in the same room as devotees and that's nice. There'll be some benefit, but the accumulation of ajñāta sukṛti will take a long time, so we're wondering why there's no devotees, because where's the dynamic association? That dynamic association is there, then naturally it moves forward. So that's the point. The movement is to create that opportunities for that association. Yes.
Can you clarify what is this dynamic association means?
That you are practicing Krishna consciousness and you show others how to practice in the same environment. Right? In other words, if you want to preach in a particular environment, you have to know how to be Krishna conscious in that environment, and that's what you're teaching. Right? So if you're teaching at the yoga studio, but you have to show how to be God conscious in that context of yoga and then how yoga fits into your life, because they're at a yoga studio, yes. And then when they leave the yoga studio, then what are they going to do? Are they yogis all day? They stay at the studio all day? No. They're not there. So that means they all have jobs, they go out, do this and that. So you have to teach them all that. You know, we're saying, oh, they can't do all these things because they're Westerners, but at the same time, then teach them how to engage the Western things in Krishna consciousness. Principles are the same, but if we're attached to their Westerns, they can't do those things, so that therefore they're going to do something else. Then what's the difference between us and anybody else? You know what I'm saying? Because everybody's just doing whatever they do, and you know, they say, you're okay, I'm okay, you know? That's like a 60s stuff. But that's okay, but at the same time it doesn't even go that far. The guys in the yoga studio are saying that, but we're saying, you're okay, I'm not okay. And so who wants to learn from someone who's not okay? You know? In other words, if you're not convinced in Krishna consciousness and you're trying to teach them that, why would they want to learn from you? You're not convinced. Right? They go to the yoga studio because someone there is into yoga. They actually are like yoga. They think it's beneficial. They'll show you things. They'll talk to you about things. Even if they're not there showing doing a course and things like that, then they're going to be coming around showing you. They're going to be talking afterwards, the whole lifestyle, everything like that. That's the whole thing. It's already yoga. We do yoga, but we're doing the bhakti part of the yoga. You can do the asanas and all that if you want, but the bhakti part's the main. So there's no contradiction. We're thinking, oh, we can't give them that because they'll go away. It's like it's like saying, okay, we can give them the drink, but you know, we can't give them the cup. You know, it's the support. It's what yoga means. Yoga means connecting to the Supreme. That's why it's called Hatha Yoga. Right? Because it's yoga through Hatha. Like that?
What does Hatha actually mean?
And it means, you know, it's all those asanas that they do and stuff like that. Because they never do the whole Astanga Yoga, so. You know, they do asanas. I heard nowadays they don't even do breathing exercises. The pranayama, they don't even do that anymore, because you know, it's too esoteric for people. So most likely the pranayama and the mudras and those things they've dropped, so they just do basic asanas, you know. They feel good, because you know, they can get absorbed in the body. At least it takes the mind off of, you know, all the other craziness. So then for them, they'll consider it a peaceful environment. Does that make sense? Yeah, because they're doing it. It's actually, the presentation is for someone who doesn't know the system so well. So, teaching what is the Supreme, how to connect to the Supreme and do that through these asanas. that's not being done, because you can do that. Otherwise, why is it you go into the asana, you see the breathing, you see the things like that. Where does that unlimited feeling and space and all that come from? That's because that's that Brahman aspect of the thing, so you're contacting Krishna. They don't know, they just know it feels nice, but the point is why? Because that's the Brahman feature of the Lord. And if that's so nice, then what about the Bhagavan feature? You know, he's in the heart, Paramatma. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that's why it gives. That's why anything is taken as something nice, because they're contacting Krishna. They don't know they're contacting Krishna, so they're looking for that happiness. We can show them that happiness because they're contacting. And now next time is when they think it was the asana, and get into the asana and that, and then they don't find it. Why? Because they're not trying to find Krishna. So then with time they'll become frustrated. You know, you come along, the person's in yoga, you come and you haven't seen it for a few years, you come and you say, oh yeah, how's the yoga going? Yeah, well, you know, I moved on, now I'm doing, you know, aerobics or something. You know, it's like, this is just something new that makes you, gives you the same effect. Because they think it's the secondary. So if we simply deal with secondary and don't teach primary, then what makes us any different than any other materials? And you say, no, but there's a potential, maybe eventually, it says, yeah. It means, but then why are we unique? Right? Because that you don't get into the things, you just go by the secondary and just get people into the feel good of that. It's technically called Hindu. Right? There's no philosophy, it's just the culture. But we're only taking that part of the culture, we're not actually taking the full lifestyle. You get up in the morning, you take your bath, you do all these things. So they only want just the part, this, doing the asanas, that's the only thing they want. You know, make the place like that. You know, isn't it interesting that they set up the yoga studio, it's more like it's oriental, like Chinese or Japanese or anything like that, but it's yoga, which is Indian. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing they don't even know. You could put up pictures of Radha Krishna. To them, it's exactly, oh no, we don't want to scare them, as if they know who they are and what it is. Oh, that's the how you say, from Rajasthan, you know, this different place like that, and from this village and all that, so then are you trying to, you know, are you trying to preach to us and make us, you know, like that? No one's going to do that. They don't care, as long as it's somewhere farther east than Italy, then they're cool. Even if it's something Greek or something Middle Eastern, you can throw it into the mix. They don't care, you know? Unless it's, and if it's European, as long as it doesn't have any clothes, that you can put up on the wall, but you know. But otherwise, it all has to have all that Oriental. So that's the thing, they can put up Oriental stuff and they have clothes, and it's interesting.
So how we can make devotees happy and satisfied, because sometimes it's not like that.
Making means you can't make someone happy and satisfied who's not endeavoring to be happy and satisfied. Right? It's not that I sit here doing nothing, so you know, the temple president's or manager's business to make me as happy and satisfied. No, you have to make the endeavor. Right? It's like eating. You can provide food and show them how to eat and what to eat with what, but you have to do the eating. Right? Not that they'll all sit there. One at a time you come, sit on the president's lap. You know, he's a grown-up, so you know how to pass me around. And then, okay, then the next time you come, you sit. Does that make sense? You know, so that, you know, if it's a small temple, then just the president can do it. But if you have these bigger temples, then you have to, you know, involve the vice president, the secretary, the treasurer. You know, they all have to be able to do those things. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you have to be endeavoring. So that's the point. Is this what we're discussing? Is the obligations of the leadership, but who they're leading also has obligations. They have to try to follow. So what we're saying is that leadership means you're following, and therefore from that position you can lead. But then the others, they have to try to follow. Right? None of them work. So if we're following, we can lead. We're not following, then how will we lead? Because leading means you're going somewhere. But that means you have to be following behind someone who's leading you. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Okay. Saintly persons like the Kumaras, Narada, Prahlad, Janaka, Sukadeva, Goswami, and Kapiladeva, as well as the followers of such authorities as the Vaishnavacharyas and their servants, can render a valuable service to humanity by disseminating knowledge of the relationship between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entity. Such knowledge is the perfect benediction for humanity. So it's not that, okay, well, that's the preaching or that's the Bhagavatam class. No, that's what we're giving. So when we're organizing things, we're organizing to do that. Does that make sense? So there is where you have classes and organized things like that, but also in when one is performing service, there's always training on how to see that connected to Krishna. And that opportunity always comes up because of our conditioning. Then that conditioning will show through, so that the different material desires, different attitudes, mentalities, those will all come up in the performance of our service. Leadership then seeing that then instructs them how to adjust that mentality so that it matches, you know, the pursuit of pure devotional service. So it's constant. It means to actually be a leader, you have to be a preacher. But it's not that, but in this case then, one is also seen to be organized, but then how that's organized, that too, one also is seeing it in the context of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, what's the point? You always have to remember that that if one is not doesn't have that leadership potential, by reading books on it, that's not going to make you a leader. Right? The person who's becoming successful from the success books is the person who's selling the success book. Right? The person who wrote it, the publishers, the distributors, the book retailers, right? The people who are doing the conferences. Right? They're making the money. Like that. People who are going aren't necessarily making. Now, if you have the potential that you have that leadership ability, then hearing it, you'll catch points. It'll speed up the process. But one has to have that attitude leadership. That's the only thing. These other things, the technique doesn't make a leader. That's what's thought. Oh, we can teach this technique. No, you can teach Krishna consciousness. That makes you a leader. And you can teach the skill. But you can't say by teaching the skill of leadership, you've made leaders. No, you make people who leaders could engage. Right? Once I remember I was talking to someone who went to, you know, these top English, you know, you say boarding schools. You know, you have Eton, Harrow, that group. You know, they go on to Oxford, that line. So then I was mentioning about how the system is, you know, geared to create leaders. And then he said yes, but he added something more. He says, you know, so they train how to be a proper leader. They also train how to be a proper follower. You know, because if you look at it without the false ego, they as leaders are following their previous leaders to them. Right? But in a sense, you know, and then there's going to be those who they themselves aren't leaders, but they can follow those who can be leaders. So the same training trains both. But one has to know the difference. Because someone who can just only follow and can't follow and then lead has to know that they're followers, not leaders. Because otherwise, if they say they're leaders, then it's going to be a problem. Like the person who can't drive and he claims that he can drive is always going to be a problem. Does that make sense? Yeah. Knowledge of Krishna is such a great gift that it is impossible to repay the benefactor. Therefore, Preeti Maharaj requested the Kumaras to be satisfied by their own benevolent activities in delivering souls from the clutches of Maya. The king saw that there was no other way to satisfy them for their exalted activities. The word Vinoda Patram can be divided into two words, Vina and Uda Patram, or can be understood as one word, Vinoda Patram, which means joker. The joker's activities simply arouse laughter, and a person who tries to repay the spiritual master or teacher of the transcendental message of, Krishna becomes a laughingstock, just like a joker, because it's not possible to repay such a debt. The best friend and benefactor of all people is one who awakens humanity to its original Krishna consciousness. That's the top, not administrators, not managers. Those who can give this. Now, amongst those who can give this, then there are those devotees who can do administration and management. Then they help organize so that this goes on. It has to be seen, one has to change that perspective. Because otherwise we're taking it that managers at the top. And that might work for the Japanese and some others. Because in the Japanese culture, they summarize the top, then the priests. Right, then the Shudras, and on the bottom of the pile are the Vaishyas. They really don't like Vaishyas. Like that. You understand? Because they take it, they're just so interested in money that they're not very personal. You know, that religious duty is all that. So we can't, we have to be very, very careful that if we take it that the administrators or those in economics, that's the top. No, Krishna consciousness is the top. Giving that to someone else, that's the top. Then, within those who are doing that, then there are those who can do these other important elements. They can deal with the economic principles, they can deal with the administrative, the managerial, they can do a particular skill. So that's the point, is everybody fits into this the organization according to their conditioned nature. But their real reason that they're part of the process is because of their commitment to Krishna consciousness, which that all souls can do. That's the principle. Everybody can be engaged in pure devotional service, but how they're going to express that's going to be according to their particular nature. And because you have such a wide variety of things, that's why there has to be someone to lead, someone to organize. Then you can do things, very nicely. So that was the view of Rupa Goswami. But we see with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that it became organized as an institution. Before that, it would be organized nicely. But, and then it would wane. But then he established the organization. But that was already, he's only established what Rupa Goswami's idea was. And so then, following in that line, then Srila Prabhupada has established ISKCON. Does that make sense? So, that's the top, because that can't be obtained. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the idea then is in administration that it is a service that we can do to engage our nature in Krishna's service, but the whole point is to be engaged in Krishna's service, and by being engaged, we can engage others. If we're trying to train ourselves, cultivate, read the philosophy, trying to understand it, then we can explain it to others, because we'll see the practical points at which it can be explained. Right? So that means we're a preacher, and we're of preachers, we're one who's organizing the preaching. So that's what the society is. Everyone according to their nature, they may preach in different ways, but the point is one's a preacher. Because one is a devotee, one is a servant of the spiritual master, that means then one can then deliver that message and practices that we've gained, and then that can benefit others. Yes? No?
Should the leader somehow divide the preaching between, let's say, his ministers and population, or so.
The point is that the higher up that it is, the more they're trained, and the more it goes down.
Yeah.
It means it's not that he doesn't do, because by training them, he's doing, you know, how you say, the, you could say, on, you know, the direct preaching, because he's training those who are working with him. And then they are working with people because they're the next line down. So then that third gen, that group, that they're training, and then they can go. It just continues.
The point is most important is to preach to those with whom he is working directly.
Yes, because that's where you get. It doesn't mean that you also don't have some other programs. That they're there, then that's nice. It means, but if everybody else is taking care, then that's not necessary. The main thing is preaching to those who are going to preach to those who are going to preach to those, like that. So, does that make sense? Because if they understand, they can work with more people. So, end here. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samadeva Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai